Thank you for the introduction, and good morning, everyone. I was going to introduce myself as a plant breeder this morning. I'm not really sure if I'm a plant breeder or not, or maybe I'm a plant agent, you know, after listening to some of the definitions this morning. Anyway, I'm located at Michigan State University here. If I can figure out what I have to move here. Okay, good, excuse me. And this is a topic I'm going to talk about, specifically legume conservation and plant breeding in a project in Ecuador that was with the national program, INEAP in Ecuador. And the funding comes through USAID and was through what has now morphed into the Legume Innovation Lab, the Feed the Future programs. This is the long title here for our project in Ecuador. Again, largely focused at breeding, using both conventional molecular approaches and participatory plant breeding to improve Andean beans. These are the large seeded beans for resistance to various stresses in Ecuador, and we also had partnerships in Rwanda. Again, at that time, before we morphed into the Legume Innovation Labs, we were, I have a hard time finding this, we were the CRISP projects, or the Pulse CRISP projects. And our project ran from about 10 years, 2002 through 2012. Okay. These are some of the people in the project. The gentleman on the right was the project leader, Eduardo Peralto. The one standing at the back was the one that led the participatory research. And in front of him was the breeder, Angel Murillo. George Abawi from Cornell is a pathologist with specialization in root pathogens, and he worked on the project. And Esteban here was a student on the project who has now got a PhD and leads the wheat project in INEAP. These were the broad objectives. I just list them. Again, focused largely on the various types of beans grown in both bush beans, climbing beans for foliar diseases. We also were looking at developing drought-tolerant materials, root rot materials, evaluating the pathogenic variability that existed for these foliar pathogens. And then, since there was no extension service in existence in Ecuador, we were using then participatory plant breeding techniques to get that material out to farmers, get it evaluated, and so forth. And training, of course, was very much part of that. The outside of the project here, we did a lot of visitation of not only production areas. You can see bush beans here on the right-hand side, where we'd be collecting germplasm, collecting various pathogens and so forth. We had climbing beans also, which are extremely important. And we were also collecting what would have been not necessarily always cultivated materials. And some of the people here assisting in this were some of our plant explorer geneticists from Mexico, Jorge Acosta, would come and assist in the characterization of this material. This was all collected and entered into the germplasm system, the plant genetic resource system in Ecuador. Okay, and we're also collecting at the bottom left there. You can see some pathogens like seed-borne diseases like anthracnose. We also participated in these ferias where local farmers would be invited in to bring their various beans, types of beans, varieties, present them. They would share these among themselves, they would be evaluated in terms of why they liked to grow them, what characteristics they had, and so forth. Then a sample of these also went into the plant germplasm system. And this was, again, coordinated through the legume program. Since there was no extension service, we worked through these local agricultural research committees, known as CIALES. There's the definition for a CIAL. That's the Spanish acronym. Jacqueline Ashbury was the one that developed this concept and so forth. And we found it to be very effective as a way to getting materials out in the hands of farmers and get that evaluated. not only in a field level where we'd introduced advanced materials for evaluation under local conditions, we get inputs from farmers and so forth on the growing conditions, but we'd also evaluate the product, the bean product, among the women who would be cooking this and also be marketing this in local markets and so forth. And, you know, we visited farms. We also brought in experts in sociology from Michigan State to assist us and been more effective in terms of how we interacted with local farmers and so forth. Just a map here to show you. This is Google Earth here, as you can tell. And here's Ecuador tucked down in here somewhere, right in here, just below Colombia. Ecuador has about 50% of its income from petroleum, and the other comes from agriculture, and they have a vast array of agricultural products from various grains, root tubers, to a whole array of tropical fruits, none of which I can name at this point in time. But again, they have a rich diversity in all of these types of crops. Okay, the project also worked in the grain Andean, granos andinos like quinoa, amaranth, and also lupin, and this is Eduardo here in some trials, amaranth trials here. So why are beans important in Ecuador? Well, there's the population, about 15 million, and these statistics might be a little old. They say the number of poor is somewhere under 5 million. People might say that should be higher. It should be closer to 6, 7 million perhaps, and then we have somewhere under 2 million have extreme poverty. We have chronic malnutrition in the country, 18% among children, and acute malnutrition at 1.7%. So beans represent a very high nutrient-dense, important food resource for this small agriculturally based community. Beans, of course, are harvested. It shows here the production, 10 kgs per capita, 30 kgs in areas where beans are actually produced. They're either harvested as dry seed, as you can see here, and served in this fashion, or they're harvested as green shell, as you can see in the bottom left-hand side of the slide. And these would go down to the major population centers like Quito, Guayaquil, and Cuenca, and so forth, and they would be high-valued. In terms of actual production, about 120,000 hectares grown annually, of which about 25,000 are bush beans, largely grown in the mountains and the Sierras, and then close to 100,000 hectares of climbing beans. So climbing beans are very important. Our project, however, in the early days focused on bush beans. Why are we interested in beans and beans, the collection of beans? Well, this is a recent paper published in Nature Genetics in 2014. And again, it confirms that beans originated in Mexico. And that beans then were moved from Mexico all the way right down into, say, south and northern Argentina. And if we try to look here, it shows the divergence of these wild bean populations some 165,000 years ago. So if we look at this stiletta, I'm having a hard time finding the cursor here, excuse me. If we look at this stiletta heel here, you can see right at this point here where I'm showing, you can see the divergence at that point from the Mesoamerican Mexican types into the Andean types. And you can see how narrow it is in terms of genetic diversity. But it's still expanded then a little later as we went into times of domestication. And in the bottom portion of the slide, we're showing the various types of wild beans all the way from the Middle American wild beans to the Andean wild beans, which are larger seeded, all the way up through current commercial types to these large seeded, what we call large seeded Andean beans, represented by kidney beans here on the extreme right of that particular chart. So we are anxious to have access to this kind of germplasm for future improvement efforts in our own bean breeding programs. We've talked about this treaty this morning. Ecuador was signed or their membership is as an accession country from May of 2004, but that treaty has not been signed or ratified by Ecuador, okay? And it's illegal to move any kind of germplasm, native germplasm, from Mexico outside the country. And anyone who is involved in doing that will be prosecuted. In fact, there's new laws just been established on it within the last year in terms of it. We were interested, we were working in Ecuador with these seed types, as you can see in the bottom slide, these large-seeded red model types, whites, yellows, and so forth. We're also working in Rwanda. We're very interested in getting some of that material into Rwanda. They have similar plant types, similar seed types, similar growing conditions, similar disease conditions. So we were very interested in seeing if we could move some of that material out of Ecuador into Rwanda. And we focused on interchange of research technologies. Here we're showing, if I can find, this is Luis Butari. He was head of the national program, the bean program in Rwanda. And we brought him to Ecuador to show him not only some of the technologies for growing climbing beans, various systems for also meeting all the researchers, learning how to handle a program, small program with limited resources, talking to farmers, talking to seed producers and so forth, and providing him with germplasm, materials that they could take back to Rwanda and test. They were particularly interested in higher elevation climbing beans at that time, and some of these materials that are shown here in the bottom slide, we were able to share with him because there were materials we had worked with, we had improved. When we started out, many of the program, we released a series of varieties. These are some of the very early varieties, Canario del Choto, Yellow Bean, Concepcion. These came from introductions from other programs or came through the international centers. These were not bred in Ecuador. They had been introduced. Franiscuro, that white bean, is one that they grow for production and consumption around Easter. And we were at that time were supported by what was called the bean cowpea crisp, which then morphed later into the Pulse Crisp. By 2007, we were releasing varieties which were actually bred then by the breeding program in INEAP in Ecuador. And you can see this one, Libertador, is a red model bean and a yellow bean, Canario Guardiano. Some of the newer varieties that came along later, and I show a few of them here. The red one in the middle is Portilla, and the one at the bottom is Rocha, a yellow bean. These were all introduced to farmers and field days and so forth, and we've listed there the number of bush beans that were released over the period of the crisps over this period of about 10 to 15 years. There was some interest in canning beans. We introduced some beans from the U.S. that had canning quality, and some of these ended up getting named and released also in Ecuador. Diseases that we focused on were foliar diseases in the early days, rust on the far left, and anthracnose, and a disease called angler leaf spot here on the right-hand side. These were introduced through Cialis in these northern production areas. This just shows some of the Cialis, these farmer participatory groups. And then again, we had to develop individuals who became seed producers who were skilled in recognizing seed, not producing grain, and getting that out. And these people were also brought in for some short-term training into the program by the researchers in INEAP. We also saw some movement of some of these varieties into other production areas that had not been growing beans, like the Intag Valley. The variety Portillo moved in there in quite a large area. And they went ahead and were able to introduce a new variety called Intag specifically for that region, better adapted to that region. Portillo had been one released for good drought tolerance. However, we ran into a problem again, root rots with a intense production, and Dr. Bobby had been working with the project in for many years, again assisting in the screening for root rot resistance and so forth, and we show a slide of him, those activities. And this was an example then where we ran into some fairly severe root rot problems in that variety in the bottom right here. And we were able to release this variety, Rojo del Valle, a red model type again, which had root rot resistance. The last release from the program was this variety called Centenario, just released in 2012. And this is what I call a variety built from scratch. This is one where the researchers accumulated four resistances into this variety, rust, anthracnose, angry leaf spot, and resistance to root rot, to Fusarium wilt. And they did that themselves and so forth. And I've been very proud of their achievement. And here they're introducing it at a field day here to the local farmers. They did release this one variety just recently, but this was an introduced variety from Honduras, and this was specifically for the canning industry. So how are some of these materials been utilized? And I realized after I made this slide a little short, some of these varieties now are been used in mapping populations, Portillo for drought, Centenario for, again, root rot resistance, and this work's going on right now in Uganda. There's also another one that's developed a mapping population that's now been used in Rwanda, the variety Concepcion. Six of the varieties from Ecuador now have been included in what we call an Andean diversity panel. And just to introduce the Andean diversity panel, this was a panel put together by my colleagues in USDA ARS, four bean scientists. They have something like a little over 400 entries. And these come from both South America, the U.S., and East Africa. They went ahead and got these genotype with SNP chip. And what has been amazing to me is it's brought a real continuity to the bean world in terms of where this panel has been evaluated. You can read the countries where it's been evaluated and been tested. And this has been supported a lot by projects, by the Legume Lab, Legume Innovation Lab projects and so forth. But the fact that this panel was genotyped meant that scientists were anxious to go ahead and get it phenotyped, because then they could run various association mapping analysis to identify traits or where traits were located in the gene in the plant genome. And this is just a molecular map or a SNP map of the materials in there, and I've shown Ecuador where their materials come out in here. There's an Ecuador in blue here on the right-hand side and at the bottom here. So again, we are getting some access to that material, and that material has been utilized by the program. What's in the future? We're no longer in Ecuador. We had a project written to continue with the Legume Innovation Lab. We're going to focus more on climbing beans, given their importance. We had spent the previous effort more largely focused on bush beans. There's serious problems with seedborne diseases and climbing beans, and that was part of our project. But politics has got in the way once again. We see at the top left here, we see our friend from WikiLeaks, who's been harbored in the Ecuadorian embassy in London for the last year or so. That politics is obviously interfering. USAID projects have been ordered out of Ecuador. The long-term consequences for these farmers who are producing beans or climbing beans, and for the livelihoods of these poor people that rely on these not only for their income but also for their food value, is quite disconcerting. And with that, thank you very much. Be happy to answer any questions.
How were you able to move seed from Ecuador to Africa? After all, we've heard this morning that seemed to be quite impossible.
We were able to move it because we had been working on breeding it, okay? So since we were involved in bringing in germplasm that they were crossing and so forth, there was an understanding that material that was bred and developed through our breeding program and so forth could be moved in a collaborative way with these other projects or through these CRISP projects, okay? That was the agreement. We could not take material we had collected in the wild, because that was regarded as native and local germplasm, and that would be an illegal for my colleagues to move and so forth. But the fact that we had been breeding it and introducing traits and so forth, it was regarded that there would be free exchange of that material, and we were therefore able to move that material then to Africa. Okay, and it introduced it into some of these various projects. Okay, that may have since changed. Not, but that's the way we were able to handle it. Okay, it was material that we already had altered in some fashion through breeding. Okay.
Right. So when you think about the constraints going forward, like in Rwanda, you have the soil-borne pathogens project, the soil pathogens.
Correct.
Project.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like right now you have the germplasm on the bean side to address some of the constraints you're seeing in Rwanda, or do you feel that there's a real need to go back to the Andean region to source resistance? I mean, where do you see that sort of on the trajectory of,
well,
from an African perspective?
We have this diversity panel currently. It's available. It's in the country. It's being evaluated. Okay, so we have to see just where that takes us in terms of resources, in terms of genetic resistance. We're most interested. There is lots of fairly good levels of genetic resistance in the Mesoamerican gene pool, but it's sometimes hard to move into these large seeded types because of certain genetic incompatibilities between them. So our first emphasis, our first approach, is to find resistance in the Andean types, and we're still looking at that. Okay, if we fail to find that, then we're going to have to look at other avenues, perhaps, or we're going to have to go back and work with the smaller seeded mesotypes, and that's going to be a longer process of moving out resistance into Andean types. It'd be much easier to hopefully find it within an Andean background. Okay, yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty here, actually. Yeah, a lot of it's going to depend on where the project takes us. But the fact that we have this panel, we're trying to get the panel expanded, or my colleagues are expanding on it still, and we'll see where that leads us in the short term.
Mm-hmm. I realize this is probably kind of gray and mixed, but when we talked about the transfer of breeding materials from Ecuador to Rwanda,
yes.
And okay, they were bred. Were they bred between wild and wild, wild and cultivars?
In terms of breeding, there was no wild material exactly in it. No, that would have been more long term. We didn't have, our project's been fairly short lived. It's about 10 years. So what we were introducing was perhaps germplasm from other parts of the world, introducing it initially into the Ecuadorian lines, getting it into seed types and growth types that were adapted. And that's the kind of material we're talking about that we were able to move. Okay. So it wasn't native wild material that we had collected or was available to us. That would have been much more long-term, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there may be value in seeing that too, but I, yeah. James?
Was available in Colombia and Peru?
Correct. Yeah, these would be regions again where Andean beans are grown and in importance and so forth. I always feel that Colombia has been pretty well covered by the fact the international center is there, see it's there, and so forth. So access to that kind of material could come through the see it germplasm bank, as long as we sign the SMTAs, and which is another troubling thing. Peru, yes, there are certain seed types, yellow seed types, that would be very important. Some of those have already been moved into other countries, and some of them are in the U.S. currently. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, they would be other potential sources, yes, of valuable germplasm sources potentially too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.